We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
You always got to find something to give you a little bit of extra motivation. You know, sometimes it's blatantly obvious.
Where did the chip come from?
I think a very little bit of it was me putting it on there. But I think a lot of it just comes from certain things. I mean, you go back. I mean, there's a commercial ran now where I'm not even in it on Fox. Put it up for the preview of U.S. Open.
Middays on the Score.
Brooks Koepka, understandably salty. I'm kind of with him on that. As, you know, you might want to include that guy in your promo for this tournament. The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Western Conference champion Chicago Wolves would like to thank their loyal fans for making this 25th anniversary so special. Thank you, and see you in October. David Dusek is on Twitter at golfweek_Dusek. He's Golf Week's senior writer and course rater, and he is on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Hello again, David. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Great. Always great to talk to you. And it's fun when you get the star power involved in this one. Tiger Woods having returned, having won the Masters, and an open at, of all places, Pebble Beach. This is there's good reason that this has got the buildup it does. No?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is always one of the two or three biggest years, you know, golf. Ryder Cup and Masters being some of the other ones, but this is one of those events where golf has a chance, depending on what happens with these NBA finals, to be on the front page of newspapers and stuff like that. And if we get the right winner, you know, who knows exactly what happens, but there's also the fact that we're here at Pebble, and this is one of the most iconic and beautiful golf courses in the world. This is the reason why you spring for the good TV down in the basement. You know, you want the big screen and the HD and all that, because this is going to look unbelievable when you see the blimp shots, when you see the images from Stillwater Cove and hitting down the little, you know, 100-yard par 3 seventh and across the gorge and the surf crashing and the dolphins. I mean, it's just so pretty it's going to make you throw up. But it's a great place to be here, and it usually gives us tremendously good theater and great champions.
We talk a lot, David, about, you know, when we get to Augusta, how that course fits itself, or there are golfers' swings and ball flight that kind of fits itself to that course. Is Pebble Beach a little different? Does it fight some swing shapes, or how does that course set up for some of the favorites here?
You know, I think it sets up really well for players who are straight, number one, because unlike when we're here for the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, which is in February, this golf course is running very, very fast. We've had tremendous weather out here in the Monterey Peninsula. Today it's in the low 60s, but it's been 75 to 80 degrees, which is very abnormal. We haven't had any rain. There's really no rain in the forecast. So the course is going to be super firm and fast, but the rough is very thick, very lush. If you get into this stuff, you're going to be in trouble. So whereas in the last couple of years, people have criticized the USGA for going to golf courses for the U.S. Open that are big open golf courses. Erin Hills, for example, a couple of years ago. Chambers Bay up in Tacoma, Washington. Huge ballpark. This is the U.S. Open that your dad grew up with. This is the kind of a place where you have to be straight. Forget the left to right, right to left. You can hit either of those shots, and long is always really good at any golf course. You have to hit fairways. And these are also the smallest greens that the players will see all year. The targets are tiny. So precision is going to be absolutely paramount with guys this year. You can't win a U.S. Open at Pebble Beach from the rough or missing greens.
You mentioned the USGA, and they've been killed for course setup over the last couple of years. They've been somewhat pigheaded in some decision making. Are they self-aware? Do they get what's coming at them from the outside, or is it such an insular? I mean, how well do they understand what's been leveled against them over the last couple of years?
Oh, they understand totally. They understand absolutely well. I have very good contacts within the USGA and some friends of mine. I even say that, you know, openly that work for them. They've screwed up. They screwed up royally over the last couple of years, and they're very aware that that is the perception, not just in the media, but among golf fans, which is the most important thing for them. Mm-hmm. And they've got to get this one right. And one of the sort of inside baseball kind of things is they hired a player named Jason Gore, who some of your listeners may remember as a guy who knocked around a little bit on the PGA Tour. Well, he's been brought in. Basically, his job is to be a liaison between the USGA and the people who make a lot of the big decisions. and the players, and to sort of be the conduit between the players and the, you know, to talk to them and to sort of be this intermediary that everybody kind of knows and respects and admires. And he's perfect for this job. So he is someone who, from a player perspective, can tell the people on the inside of the USGA, look, do this, don't do that. This is how those decisions are going to be perceived outside of this boardroom. And then vice versa, talk to the players and be like, look, guys, sometimes here or there, you got to suck it up with this decision that's going on. Might not seem obvious, but here's the rationale and the thinking. Because everybody respects the guy so much, they're willing to listen. And I think it's a great hire, and it's a position. They should have had somebody in that role doing this 30 years ago, but better late than never. And I think they are trying to do the right thing. So far, so good. Everybody loves the golf course the way it's set up. And with the weather being what it is, it's totally in their hands. It should go well.
So we start looking at the current list of those who drive the ball straight in driving accuracy percentage. And obviously, not all of these guys are going to be contenders. But you start to see who might be ready for something like this. Jim Furyk is number one, but is certainly well past the peak of his powers.
Yeah.
Ryan Moore is fourth. Henrik Stenson is seventh. And there's Matt Kuchar at nine. Paul Casey at 16. Webb Simpson hits these fairways 68% of the time. What numbers are you starting to look at as you start to handicap the field?
When you start to mention guys, for example, you know, like Matt Kuchar, and you start to mention somebody like a Paul Casey, veteran players who've been around, they're top tens all the time. I mean, those guys are walking ATMs because their games are complete and they're good with that stuff. It's going to be a little bit interesting to see, not just with the driver, because you're going to have to hit driver and hit fairways with it, but a lot of the biggest hitting guys, the Dustin Johnsons, the Rory McIlroys, the Brooks Koepkas of the world, they're going to be able to hit, if the golf course is running really fast, and I think it's going to be, they're going to be able to hit 3-wood 300 yards or more. And depending on the curvature and where they need to place it, they might not need to be able to hit driver as many times as we ordinarily would think. In February, during the Pro-Am, you have to, because the air is heavy. The course tends to be wet and soft. Here, that's not the case. So it's a little bit difficult to use some of the statistics that we have from week-to-week PGA Tour events at U.S. Open because the venues are so different. It's a good guideline. It's a good place to start. I really like the idea of somebody like Kuchar being able to play well here because he's a very good all-around player. He's had a great season. Paul Casey, who you mentioned, that kind of guy. But let's see what kind of game Dustin Johnson and Koepka and some of the people that we would think, what kind of clubs they're going to have to hit onto these fairways, and then what is that going to leave them into these tiny greens?
You mentioned Brooks Koepka. He's going for his third straight U.S. Open. Only one other man has done that. Is Koepka fueled by anything other than hatred and protein bars?
I think there might be some whey protein that's mixed into with all that stuff. You know, he's an interesting and he's a complicated guy. I like Brooks a lot. I think that he is somebody who would prefer to let the clubs do the talking, but has learned over the last couple of years that modern society and sport media and fans and social media and all that stuff demand a little bit more than just going out there and hitting the golf ball and doing that part of the job. He holds no punches. He doesn't like to hang around with people who are kind of ridiculous in his mind. He is supremely talented and motivated, and he is very singular in purpose. And a lot of times that comes off, I think, sometimes like he is isolated or aloof or just doesn't care about other things. He's got one thing on his mind. When he is out here, he is trying to win golf tournaments. And when he listens to people do things that he thinks are either destructive or they're claiming to try and win golf tournaments, but then they have a really lousy attitude or they don't put in the work that he knows he's doing, he doesn't suffer for it. He has no patience for people who are doing that kind of stuff. So I think in some ways he's a little bit misunderstood. He is ridiculously talented and ridiculously driven, as you sort of pointed out. So I think that he is definitely going to be a factor in this. I think it might be almost too much to ask that somebody wins 3 U.S. Opens and 2 PGA championships in a row. It's just the laws of probability start kicking in on that. But I wouldn't bet against him.
How does Tiger Woods' current game, the way he's playing, set up for this course, this field, this weekend?
See, I think it should set up well. If you look at the numbers, you would say, okay, here's a guy who is an elite ball striker, an elite iron player, and that's perfect for Pebble Beach. I don't know when he misses. Sometimes he misses badly, and that is something that's going to get penalized here. In 2000, Tiger Woods played probably the best golf tournament anybody's ever played and just ran away from the field here at Pebble. It's sort of the benchmark, if you will, for great play, not just in U.S. Opens, but for golf, period. The problem that I have right now with Tiger is when he hits driver, he's not accurate with it. And he's not the longest guy in the world like he was, you know, 10, 15 years ago. So that part's there. He has to be precise. And this venue sets up very differently than Augusta National, where there is no rough. You can recover from all over the golf course. Your creativity is really rewarded. And he knows that venue like the back of his hand. He's been playing it since 95 when he played there as an amateur. Now, he knows Pebble Beach backwards and forwards as well. But it puts different demands on his game. He has to stay in the fairway. If Tiger isn't hitting 10 out of 14 fairways each day, he's really going to be struggling. He has to be in the fairway. He should be willing to give up 10 or 15 yards in distance, maybe three woods or a driving iron instead of a driver on some holes. If it means fairway, he has to be in the fairway. But I don't know that he's going to be able to do that.
David, you said something there that warmed my heart. You are one of the rare golf experts that says amateur instead of amateur. It has always been a pet peeve of mine that it's a golf thing. The word is amateur, yet golf people refer to it as amateur. Why is that?
Because sometimes the tweed in our jackets gets us a little bit muffled and you just sound like ridiculous. I don't know.
Is that what it is?
Those elbow patches.
It might be the only person that's driven crazy with that, but thank you for not being one of those people. Now, what's the way at a golf course like this to set up one's bag properly, knowing that you're going to have that much rough? Do you want to have three different wedges? You want to have like a 52, a 56, and a 60 wide open flop wedge? I mean, what's the best way to do it? Or is that just completely relative to one's own game?
Each guy's going to look at it differently, and they will see as they play the practice rounds here Monday, Tuesday, and some guys, nobody's going to play 18 holes today. But they have done their homework, and they know that, for example, the first hole is probably going to be a three wood or a hybrid club for most of them into like an 8 or a 9 iron, and it's going to be a little bent to the right. They map all this stuff out, and there could theoretically be no situation under normal circumstances where they would hit, say, a 4 iron or a 3 iron or something like that. So they might yank that club in and put in an extra wedge just to give them a little more versatility. They'll have to decide, and caddies and players will look at the weather forecast, and they usually come with usually between 17 and 20 clubs. You're only allowed to have 14 in your bag when you play, but you can bring to the tournament as many as you want. They'll come up with some kind of a combination that they feel gives them coverage over every shot that they should be able to hit, plus some versatility. And usually that means having 3 to 4 wedges and only having one fairway wood or a hybrid club or something like that. There are many players who are putting in driving irons, like a 2 iron. Jimmy Walker has a 1 iron in the bag this week because he's going to try and chase that thing out there and really let it run on these firm and fast fairways, keep the ball down. We haven't had wind, but he's looking for the chase through the fairway. Every player will look at where the golf course sets up for his game and then come up with a combination of 14 that he feels covers everything that they need to cover and gives them versatility in case they screw it up.
So, David, we've reached the portion of the interview where we just ask you for the favorites. Who's looking good to you in practice rounds? Who's looked good to you the last 2 weeks?
And a value bet. Like, yeah. If you start looking at some of the odds, say, look at somebody, because a lot of legalized gambling is now a thing.
Find me the dark horse.
People love betting golf.
All right. So this is a place where if you take a look at the last winners of U.S. Opens at Pebble Beach, Graham McDowell in 2010, Tiger Woods in 2000, Tom Kite in 92, Tom Watson, Jack Nicklaus. You notice a pattern here? Guys who are probably going to end up in the Hall of Fame, this is a chalk golf course. And so I think that, well, you know, you might want to look for long shots in terms of like who you genuinely think is going to win. It's going to be a top 10 player. It's going to be a name that we know. And I would take Dustin Johnson. He won the 2009 and 2010 AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Ams. He should have won here. In 2010, he had a triple bogey on the second hole on the final day. He started the day with a 3-shot lead over McDowell, who was the eventual winner, and 5 shots over Tiger. DJ has won earlier this year. He's been a runner-up at both the Masters and the PGA Championship. His game sets up really well, I think, for this golf course because he's one of those guys who can keep it in the fairways when he needs to. He hits a lot of greens. He's now a top 20 in the world putter. Statistically, so he's putting really well. There's nothing that you can look at and say that that's actually a problem for DJ. He has no problems.
Yeah, the problem is 9-1, though. The problem is there's no value there when I'm looking at John Rahm at 25-1, Xander Schauffele at 25-1.
Okay, so here's the thing. You still throw it. So John Rahm is local in the Capesa. So you can get all the value you want, and then when he doesn't win, you lose your money. So
right.
You tell me which way you want to go with this.
Well, you got to risk some to win some, I guess.
Like, if you want to risk a little bit, tell me. I don't have the sheet right in front of me. Take a look. You mentioned Paul Casey. You did mention Matt Kuchar. Mm-hmm. I like both of those. If you want real value, take a look. Where's Billy Horschel?
Right,
Billy
Horschel
is...
Okay,
Billy Horschel is...
I'll check Billy Horschel. Kuchar's at 40-1. Paul Casey is at 50-1. Billy Horschel is among those at 150-1.
Billy Horschel has a very long shot, obviously, to win the U.S. Open. He's ranked, I believe, number 38 in the world. Billy Horschel is a tough guy. Billy Horschel is a really nice guy, but when he plays like a tough guy, U.S. Opens are tough guy tournaments. It's a mental test as much as it is a physical test because everyone's going to make bogeys. Everyone's going to really have to grind it out. Horschel has been putting a lot better. He's got a lot more confidence. He and his coach, Todd Anderson, I see them constantly grinding and they're seeing the results of that. He is an average driver of the golf ball statistically, a tour average kind of a guy. But he is not negative in terms of any aspects of his game. He's a good player in everything. And U.S. Opens can reward that kind of a thing. And his attitude, I think, is great. If you're looking for a real flyer, Billy Horschel could be your guy. Otherwise, again, if you're looking for a value play, if you said that it was 50-1 for Paul Casey, I love Casey at 50-1.
Sounds like you just made Billy Horschel my favorite $10 golfer of the weekend. David, thanks as always.
Talk to you guys later. Thanks a lot.
That is David Dusek. If you weren't ready for the U.S. Open before, you certainly are now. That is full-service, one-stop shopping, preparing for yet another major with just a star-studded field now.
I pick four golfers every tournament to put bets on, and I have one, two, three, four, five, six right now that I'm narrowing down. I think I can get you the four golfers I'm going to make a bet on by the time we close the show today.
Yeah,
I'm getting close to it.
I love the way Patrick Cantlay's playing, and he's at 18-1. Bryson DeChambeau's at 40-1. Yeah. Tommy Fleetwood is 33.
Yeah, you had Kuchar at 50? I have him 40. At 40. Okay,
all right. Yeah, he's at 40, and Paul Casey is the one who's at 50.
John Rahm, as crazy as he is, at 25-1. I know.
Loco in the cabeza.
I'm off him. I still think John Rahm will win a major at some. Yeah. He's just too talented not to. But having watched him the last pair, I don't think this season is going to be the season that I bet John Rahm for the last two.
This segment's brought to you by Campland RV. Head on over to Campland RV for their 58th anniversary sale now through the end of June. Find great deals on RVs and campers. Campland RV. RV buying made easy. Just a short drive off I-94 in Northwest Indiana.
So Tommy Hotovy, the Cubs pitching coach, was on Mully and Haw this morning. We've seen an effort out of one particular Cubs reliever that has gone sideways and sideways fast. He also talked a bit about the Craig Kimbrell experience and what Cubs fans can expect. A rough one for them last night against the Rockies, but some interesting perspective from the Cubs pitching coach. You'll hear some of that. We'll talk about what happened with the Cubs last night. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
What we're trying to do with Brad and with all of our guys is just remind them, you know, what we can control. What we can control is, you know, our mindset on the mound and what we're trying to do with each pitch and then just execute. If we keep focus on that and Brad keeps working on that, he's going to be fine, and we're going to get through this. It's easier said than done when you're not the one going through it, and I think he's handled this whole stretch the right way, and he's staying focused.
Cubs pitching coach Tommy Hotovy on with Mully and Haw this morning. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves, the Western Conference champion Chicago Wolves. Would like to thank the loyal fan base for making this 25th anniversary so special. Thank you, and see you in October. Some other things that you noted from that interview.
Yeah, there were a couple of things. I want to get to the Brad Brock situation first, though, because it's a reliever where, honestly, it's interesting to watch Joe use his circle of trust, right? I mean, the relievers that he does feel comfortable using in high leverage situations, his even or ahead guys, all that stuff. I think it's been well chronicled through his time as Cubs manager. But what I also find interesting, though tougher to watch, is how he deploys pitchers, his bullpen guys, that he's trying to get back into the circle of trust.
Mid-leverage?
Well, you saw that game kind of get out of hand. I mean, still, it's a Coors game. I mean, Jay's doing, in the meeting this morning, it's a Coors game. I have to remind myself of that sometimes because three runs or four or even five isn't out of reach.
Also, means don't walk people.
Definitely don't do that. Don't walk people. And it was certainly a rough one for Brad Brock last night. He gave up four earned while not walking anybody, which was interesting. But the way Joe goes about throwing those guys into situations where, you know, you're pitching, man. You're out there and trying to find stuff, and at some point, And sometimes Joe doesn't really necessarily care that you get shelled. The more important issue is that you work out your own stuff, or at least try to. And it seems like that's where Brad Brock has been his last couple of outings, giving up 4 earned in each of his last 2. The ERA, not that it matters all that much for a reliever, it's going to be slanted, but it's like 9.7. The whip is astronomical, and the batting average against is damn near 400. All that kind of stuff has not been good for him. But, you know, I think with the way their depth works, even with the addition of Craig Kimbrell when he gets there, bullpen's probably still a better one if Brad Brock is throwing the way he has, you know, when he's been good. And it's disconcerting to hear him say things like he feels like he might have some of the best stuff of his career, but can't miss any bats. You know, those are really tough comments to kind of square with the performance he's got.
And it's the not finishing guys off. It's the getting ahead, executing pitches, setting up a plate appearance in a way that should give him all the advantages, and then it goes sideways on him. That gets really frustrating.
You mean Montgomery-ing?
No, but he's got stuff, though.
Yeah, you're right. Better than Brock. That's true.
Yeah, the Montgomery-ing is
it's the nibbling.
0-1, 1-1. 1-2, foul ball, 2-2, foul ball, 3-2, foul ball, walk.
Yeah. It's frustrating. And that's where, you know, you watch Peter Lambert, one of the Rockies' top pitching prospects, who's now got himself 2 good outings against the Cubs. 5 innings and 3 strikeouts for him. But did you notice the similarity in his swings and misses? Did you notice the thing that he's doing that every other pitcher throwing for swings and misses is doing? It's 94 or 95 with the fastball, but it looks like, just anecdotally speaking, it looks like that's the high spin rate fastball, and that's the up in your eyes fastball. And when you're getting guys like Anthony Rizzo to swing through that kind of stuff, that is your, you know, archetypical swing and miss, high fastball, get it out of the swing plane kind of guy.
And it's also the newly understood side to side breaking slider.
Yeah.
When you are able to, it's not necessarily what they always wanted, the 12-6 tilt, and always wanted stuff to break down, down, down. Now, because you know that that's where the barrels live, all of these pitching engineers are learning now. It's much more important, or as important at least, to have something with side break, with something that is going to move laterally away from a bat and stay up in a zone.
Just out of curiosity, has someone been paging through the MVP machine lately?
Maybe. We've mentioned this book before.
Number of times, yeah.
You're going to hear us mention it again. We are going to be talking with the authors of this book on this show. It is so important if you are a baseball fan. And I've no vested interest in endorsing it and doing nobody any favors.
But I'm happy to do that.
I'm truly letting you know.
Do they sell pills as well? I'd like to sell pills for the book.
The MVP machine. I'm only a couple chapters in.
Yeah.
And already it's a revelation. Already understanding the reason you have to read it is because this isn't speculative, it isn't theoretical, it isn't backward looking. It is literally telling you what big league teams and big league players and fringe professional players, what they are doing themselves to make themselves better baseball players. The analogies that they're using was Billy Martin's old idea. It's like, well, you got a team, you got your mules, you got your horses, you got your racehorses, and that's all you got, and that's all you're ever going to be. And you just got to make sure that you got you're winning because of your racehorses. And now they're saying you can turn a mule into a horse. You can turn a horse into a thoroughbred. That these incremental changes, a player himself can walk in to a nondescript facility somewhere and look at himself in all kinds of new and different ways. The book is so important that it's almost like I know by the time I get done, I will only want to have baseball conversations with people who also have read it. And you're going to have the same feeling, too, when you pick it up. You're going to have the same feeling, too. There's so much wow to it. And it's all real stories of actual guys in the major leagues tracking what they've done and how they've done it. When we talked to Kyle Ryan.
Yeah.
And Kyle Ryan's like, yeah, somebody from the Cubs saw something and called me. And this guy was out of baseball, out of the league, maybe going to Korea or pitching independently somewhere. All of a sudden is on a big league pitching staff because some Cub front office guy had an idea about how to change an arm slot to make him good again.
And it's not just computers that are spitting out these kind of recommendations. You know, we talked a lot last season about the story that Adam Ottavino was, the fact that he rent a storefront somewhere in New York and then took it upon himself to use one of the cameras, I believe it was an Edgertronic, and just develop his own pitch, develop that kind of breaking stuff that's made him one of the better relievers in baseball over the last few years. I know it's not gone perfectly for him this season, but you know, it's those kind of stories, those kind of human sides of the stories that matter just as much as front offices has become, you know, more similar to the next, right? The intelligence has spit out the same kind of information about what to value in players. Players have themselves tried to find the ways to get better on the margins. And as it turns out, as much of an asshat as I think Trevor Bauer can be at times, inventing a new way to become, and it's mostly for pitching at this point, not that it can't help hitters, but it's mostly for pitching. And it seems like you can engineer and create a better pitcher out of a perhaps less athletic specimen, after out of a guy that wouldn't necessarily get 1-1 draft consideration.
Again, it's called the MVP machine, and it's written by Ben Lindbergh and Travis Sawchuk. And the other aspect, it isn't as if there are the, you know, the nerds in the suits from Harvard having players come in and say, on the assembly line. The players, it's word of mouth.
Yep.
It's independent of team. Because of a lot of these facilities are independent places, not affiliated with teams, players are talking just saying, hey, you got to see this thing I learned, or I noticed something in your swing. Maybe you can generate a little more launch angle. You come to me and let's go to this place. Let's meet here. And they're doing it on their own. So it's like it's organic, grassroots, player-driven stuff.
Do you remember the conversations that baseball fans and baseball and you guys used to have in the steroid days, right? Right after the Mitchell report and the height, like let's call it 05, before A-Rod comes out and admits that he used steroids, but after Barry Bonds.
Is that when the players I talked to saying, damn it, I don't want to have to use steroids, but now I feel like I kind of do and it sucks?
When you're on the fringe, man, and you're right there, your last major league chance is gone by you, but you're 29 and damn it, you don't have anything else to do.
Your newborn is crying in the room next to you. Yep.
You know what you do? You go to every means necessary to stay in the big leagues and do the one thing that you feel you're capable of doing. And I won't say that this is... I can't tell you that the game is clean now. It's probably cleaner than it was before. And really, you know, I don't know that you can make that big a case. Or there is a case to be made, and Joe Sheehan makes it often, like how much did PEDs really help the performance of some of these players? That's a whole nother rabbit hole you can head down. But when you have players who are now like Max Muncy, for instance, or Justin Turner or Josh Donaldson, who are just scratching at it and just looking up at a depth chart that's going to smother you, you do things like this. You reinvent yourself and you start taking pieces of advice from sources that would otherwise kind of be tossed to the side. And that's what has invented this era of baseball, whether you like watching it or not, as much as anything else. It's a little bit of that desperation that's reinvigorated some players to changing their total approach and then changing their earning potential too.
Yeah, my son told me to read the book as quickly as possible because he leaves for camp on Monday and he wants to take the book to overnight camp with him. So I told him I would try to grind through it. By the way, Ben Lindbergh, the co-author, is going to join the Bernstein and McKnight show on Monday at 11 a.m.
Excellent.
That works out nicely. And you know what else we have for tomorrow?
What's that?
We have Cubs Sox tickets we're going to give away.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So that's going to be good.
Well, that's got plenty to do then the next couple of days.
We also have Lawrence Holmes, who's going to be coming up in just a bit here joining us in the culinary studio. But it's been a very busy day with golf stuff, a lot of football stuff. And if you're just joining us, the Bears already have cut another kicker earlier this morning. It was a transaction just as we're preparing for the show and preparing to talk about kickers.
Right.
They cut Chris Blewett, and headline writers will do their little dance and make their little jokes.
That's been our day. The kicking situation is just a... I mean, it's just going to be some guy. It's going to be some veteran cut from some other team
that's
going to be placed on there, and you've heard of him, and then he'll kick, and things will probably be fine enough. Still, I feel like we've gone far too long in the Bears conversation this morning without saying it. Score 24. Remember? That's our thing. Score 24 points a night.
Hashtag score 24.
Hashtag.
He's McKnight. I'm Bernstein. You're listening to Sports Radio 670. The Score with Lawrence coming up. Thanks to Mike Florio and David Dusek for joining us today. Jay Zawoski, Rick Camp, and Ray Diaz, the producers. Brian Gertz, the video feed. Kevin Zipak had the updates tomorrow. It's Thursday already. Ian Rappaport and Len Casper on football and the Cubs, respectively. Also, we will be reacting to tonight's Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. I don't really care all that much who wins. Either you're going to have really happy St. Louis Blues fans or really happy Boston.
Neither of those things feel good to me at all.
It's all fine, but there's no television competition for it tonight as far as we're concerned, because the Cubs are a day game. White Sox are off, so it'll certainly help you
recruit
in the Chicago market. The segment brought to you by Lakeside Bank. Good treasury management is good business, but there's a secret. At many banks, it's cookie cutter and it's costly. At Lakeside Bank, they design custom programs for each client and save them money. Call Lakeside Bank. Learn the secret to real treasury management. Lakeside Bank, it's about time. It's about time for Lawrence Holmes. He's here. He is literally waiting in the wings here in our culinary studio, our temporary home.
Do we have wings in the culinary studio?
I guess.
Figurative wings.
Well, no, there's...
He's literally waiting in the figurative wings.
Wings, the with the Y.
Yes, it's wings. Now, you can refer to the area of a studio, the wings
that
of the
set. Makes sense to me. I just wanted to ask.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure.
You can, I think. I give him a lot of little license there. So we'll do transition. Keep it here. You got the score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.